and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, March 11, 2024. The UN Secretary General calls for a ceasefire in Sudan.
The fighting there must end for the sake of the Sudanese people who face hunger, horrors, and untold hardships. In Gaza, in Sudan, and beyond, it's time for peace.
And some women in South Sudan fight unemployment by creating their own jobs.
I have more than 6 volunteers now. They come to me, I don't refuse. I don't refuse giving them opportunity to learn.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A Sudan analyst is calling on the international community to exert maximum pressure on Sudan's warring parties to reach a ceasefire. The UN Security Council last Friday called for a truce before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. The assistant commander-in-chief of Sudan's armed forces rejected the calls for a ceasefire. Suleiman Baldo is the director of the Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. He tells my colleague James Batty that a ceasefire is not likely to happen because of the Sudanese army's demands, which he says amounts to a complete surrender of the paramilitary rapid support forces.
It should be possible, but given the attitude of the belligerents, I believe there is a little chance that this call for ceasefire will be taken seriously by either of the belligerents. You know, they are actually the army came out with a very, let's say, harsh and conditionalities to observe a ceasefire or even enter into talks about a truce. And these are conditions that cannot be met by the RSF, because simply it means that RSF would surrender militarily, while on the battlefield the realities dictate otherwise.
Talking about the conditions, one of them being that the RSF withdrawal from occupied cities in Darfur and Kordofan and the departure from Khartoum, you are saying that doesn't seem possible.
These are conditions for total surrender. Sudan Armed Forces has not managed to reduce RSF to that point whereby it is militarily defeated and therefore has to totally surrender, canton its fighters and withdraw from territories it occupied. On the contrary, you know, rapid support forces now occupy de facto all of Western Sudan, except pockets in South Kordofan and West Kordofan. So the battleground has not given advantage to any of the two belligerents. So putting conditions of surrender of the RSF is not realistic, simply put.
In the meantime, U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan, Tom Perillo, is traveling to Africa Monday, the 11th, with the emphasis of trying to bring peace to Sudan. Can you tell us your assessment of his coming trip?
I believe that the attempts to get the two parties to sit to a negotiating table to agree simply to a humanitarian ceasefire have been ongoing by the U.S. and other mediators, IGAD and African Union, since the beginning of the war. And this has given us no peace until today, which means the problem is in the stubbornness and the recklessness of the two parties. You know, they do not want to take into consideration the suffering of the people of Sudan. And therefore, the belligerents are really not going to heed calls or attempts to present new initiatives. I think the only way to impose a ceasefire is to exert maximum pressure that is coordinated between the U.S., the European Union, and the regional countries. They should all exert pressure on the two parties so that they come to some sense and agree to a break in the fight.
What would maximum pressure be like?
Abide by, non-direct intervention by regional actors. No party should extend military support for either party. Second, enforce interdiction of deliveries of weapons from regional actors. Third, really increase the economic pressures on their financial and corporate holdings so that the ability of the army, the rapid support forces to finance their military destructive efforts should be weakened and disrupted.
That's Suleiman Baldo, the director of the Sudan Transparency and Tracker Policy Tracker. He spoke to VOA's James Buddy on Sunday. On the first day of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire and immediate release of all hostages in Gaza and reiterated a call for cessation of hostilities in Sudan.
Today marks the start of the holy month of Ramadan, a period when Muslims around the world celebrate and spread the values of peace, reconciliation, and solidarity. Yet, even though Ramadan has begun, the killing, bombing, and bloodshed continue in Gaza.
Guterres reminded the Council that it has been 6 months since the Hamas attack on Israel and the subsequent ground invasion of Gaza by Israel. He appealed to both warring sides to honor the spirit of Ramadan by silencing the guns and removing all obstacles to ensure the delivery of life-saving aid at the speed and massive scale required. Guterres also called for immediate release of all hostages and said the eyes of the world is watching. Turning to Sudan, the UN boss called again on the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces to stop fighting.
The fighting there must end for the sake of the Sudanese people who face hunger, horrors, and untold hardships. In Gaza, in Sudan and beyond, it's time for peace. I call on political, religious, and community leaders everywhere to do everything in their power to make this holy period a time for empathy, action, and peace.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking in New York on Sunday. President Salva Kiir dispatched a delegation to prepare grounds for negotiations with holdout rebel groups who refused to be part of the 2018 peace agreement. President Kiir's special envoy, Albino Obuang, who heads the government delegation, says his team held pre-consultation meetings with the Kenyan government in preparations for negotiations with holdout groups. He tells me President Kiir does not want to leave any group behind.
And we have some other parties who are in the border of South Sudan and North Sudan. For example, like Stephen Boyronyang. The all-out group are those who are negotiating with the government in Rome. That is not something new. It has been going on for several years. The parties are very well known, so I don't need to go there.
We know that you have a former head of the military, General Malong, who has his own group. You have SOMA, which is an alliance of other opposition groups, but one group fought back on the proposal by President William Ruto to have a pre-negotiations in Nairobi. I'm talking about the National Salvation Front. They fought back saying they don't understand the basis for this and they want to go back to Rome. Are you talking to them in Nairobi right now?
It is not our responsibility to talk to them. It is the responsibility of the mediator. And I don't know why. I don't know who is going to negotiate in Europe. The African problem can be solved by African solutions. So I do not understand what is behind it. But at the end, the peace initiative was in Nairobi. It was transferred from Nairobi to Rome, and you can ask Thomas Cirillo about that, but I don't know why is he insisting if he's...
Apart from the leader of the National Salvation Front, who else is in Nairobi sitting with you?
Until now, we have not sat with anything, with anybody. There is a pre-negotiation which is going on, pre-arrangement between us and the government of Kenya. We are still talking. As soon as possible, we are going to be invited by the government of Kenya. We will be in Nairobi, hopefully.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You are saying that you are doing a pre-negotiations with the Kenyan government to pave way for what you would call negotiations with the holdout group. Is that correct?
It's what we call it pre-consultations.
So you're doing pre-consultation with the Kenyan government right now?
Absolutely.
I mean, you are heading a group of 6 to 7 people. correct?
More than that. I'm heading a group of 10 people in addition to me, 11.
Yeah, so if you're heading a group of 11 people, that's a serious delegation, and people are waiting to hear what is happening.
Anything related to the national interest must be taken or to be taken, should be taken seriously. And that's why His Excellency, the President of the Republic, he doesn't want to leave anybody behind. He wants to carry everybody along with him.
But you were also asking me to ask General Thomas Cirillo why he doesn't want to come to Nairobi. Shouldn't that be your job, ask him why he's not in Nairobi negotiating with you? Because you are representing the government.
It is the government of Kenya, the mediator which will house him. We have sent the request for us to be in Kenya. It is for him now to explain himself why he doesn't want to be in Kenya.
But you were telling me that these holdout groups must come home because nobody wants to be left out. Why should Kenyans talk to him, not in, as opposed to you?
Yes, and based on my understanding, it is very simple. The comprehensive peace agreement was negotiated in Kenya between us and by then Sudan. Similarity and the history is repeating itself. And that's why we have decided this peace initiative, because Kenya, they have a very, very good understanding about our case. Even this peace, a couple years back, it used to be Nairobi, and it was transferred from Nairobi to Rome. Simultaneously now, we are saying it has to be transferred due to others' reason to be transferred to Kenya, because the distance is very close. It is 1 hour and 10 minutes to be in Nairobi. It is about 10 hours or 9 hours to be in Rome.
Honorable Albino, I have been following the talks with at St. Gideon, the groups that did not sign the peace agreement. I can't remember when they last met in Nairobi. You're telling me it started in Nairobi?
Well, good friend, go back to 2018. This peace initiative used to be in Nairobi. Check your book very well and get back to me before it went to Rome.
And so how long is your delegation of government of South Sudan? How long are they going to be engaged in pre-consultation with the government of Kenya?
Soon we are done, and soon the Kenyans are done. The mediator will send out the official letter, and we will be in Nairobi as soon as possible.
How soon is soon?
You can have the mediator. We are expecting their letter to come as soon as possible.
That's President Salva Kiir's special envoy, Albino Obuong, who is also the head of a delegation that is currently talking to the Kenyan government about a scheduled negotiations with the held-out groups. He spoke to me via WhatsApp from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, this past hour. Still on South Sudan, some women say the high unemployment in the country has forced educated women to abandon their professional careers and venture into other businesses to be self-reliant. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Boutique owner Stella Alex says women in South Sudan should learn other skills for survival. Alex says after searching for a job opportunity in Juba for a long time without success, she decided to start her own fashion business. She says young women in South Sudan who have completed their studies should take up available opportunities to create jobs.
There is nothing waiting for you. You have to come back and start something for yourself. It doesn't matter what kind of a job. You can start with washing utensils somewhere. It doesn't mean you have graduated. There are some specific jobs that you can do. No, we don't have that kind of opportunity in this country. Start up with anything that you can start with, and then you can find yourself somewhere eventually.
Josephine Achiro, an executive director of a community radio network and the director of Bakita Radio, says most South Sudanese women want to work in offices with air conditioning. She says her office is empowering young women to become professionals.
At Radio Bakita, I have more than 6 volunteers now. They come to me, I don't refuse. I don't refuse giving them opportunity to learn. It is up to them after 3 months to either continue with me or go and look for a job. So I have now, I think, 3 ladies that I am coaching now. One of them is now doing it well in terms of presentation, but I have 2 other more that I am coaching.
Susan Pasquale is the executive director of a Juba advocacy group, the Women Advancement Organization. Pasquale says South Sudan culture puts pressure on working women and some wind up losing their jobs.
Even those who are working, most of the time you find them, they cannot be promoted because they have a lot of work to do at home. Most of the time you see that either they are demoted because they do not concentrate on their job, most especially if it is office job. And if it is a businesswoman, most of the time because she spent most of her time maybe doing the housework, and for her to go and take care of her business in the marketplace becomes difficult because the demand on her to work, to do other work, is too much on her.
Pasquale says although the transitional government has pledged to make sure women hold 35% of jobs in the government of national unity, many women need vocational training and awareness to achieve the power-sharing quotas.
We need to train women on job skills. Us as a civil society organization, so humanitarian workers, we are supposed to do a lot of awareness raising among the women, most especially on job training. We need to do for them a lot of on-job training so that they can learn how to focus on their job and leave alone those things of the cultural attachments.
The unemployment rate in South Sudan stands at 21%. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias reporting from Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Zambia fights HIV/AIDS. Find out how after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Zambia has received the first shipment of a new medicine to prevent HIV infection. The delivery makes Zambia only the second country in the world after the United States to offer this injectable preventive outside of a research setting. Cut it short, reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
For 2 years, Precious Mbomboli took pills daily to prevent infection with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. But the 21-year-old is among the first in Zambia to receive a new injectable prevention drug.
For 2 years, yes.
I changed the new injectable on 25th February because the pill was difficult for me, as I used to forget to take it. Sometimes I was not at home at the time of taking the medication, so the injection makes me feel better and confident.
The new drug is known as Cabotegravir Gravier long-acting. Each shot prevents infection for 6 months. Zambia is the first low- or middle-income country to offer the drug to the public. Lina Mwango is technical director of the local non-profit CHEP Zambia.
Our target age group for this is adolescent girls and young women who are aged 16 to 24, as well as we're reaching out to their sexual partners.
Local representatives called Connectors are helping roll out the program.
The Connector is based in the community. We do community mobilization. We do community sensitizations. We go on screen the girls that are eligible for DREAMS. Those that are eligible get to be enrolled.
The U.S. government has donated nearly 15,000 vials of the drug known as Cabotegravir Gravier. That's enough to protect 2,000 Zambians against HIV for 1 year, the U.S. embassy says. But experts say people who get the shot still need to take precautions.
People get the injection and then they think it's a silver bullet, in that then they can go out and sleep around. And really the message here is that that's not why this drug has been brought on board. To realize that this drug does not prevent pregnancies, it doesn't prevent other sexually transmitted infections.
About 1.4 million Zambians are living with HIV, with about 33,000 new infections per year. Experts hope the new drug can help bring those numbers down. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
From Zambia, we go to Gaza, where the United Nations says at least 20 children in Gaza have died of starvation, and doctors say many more are increasingly suffering from grave physical and mental illnesses. VOA's Heather Murdock reports from Istanbul.
Children in Gaza haven't been to school since the Israel-Hamas war began. But parents here say, right now, this is the least of their problems. UN figures show more than 12,000 children have died in the war, and 20 of starvation in recent weeks. Another 17,000 have lost or been separated from their parents. Almost all children in Gaza have been forced to flee their homes, and parents say even the best cared for are traumatized. Hekmet Al-Masri, a mother in Gaza, says her son weeps at night, crying out for his father, his home, and the life he used to have. Nearly 31,000 people have been killed in Gaza, according to the Gaza Ministry of Health. The war began on October 7th, when Hamas attacked Israel, killing 1,200 people and taking 240 hostages. Most of Gaza's 2 million-plus population is now crowded into emergency shelters in Rafah, near the Egyptian border. In this hospital, pediatricians say every child they see is suffering from noticeable psychological and physical trauma and the consequences of hunger. Dr. Saeed Abdulrahman Mahmoud Marouf is a pediatrician at Abu Yusuf Al-Nasr Hospital. He says all the children he sees are having problems growing, and they are sick. Even the mothers don't have milk to feed their babies. They tell him, "I can't make milk to give them, and how could I possibly buy it?" Some children, he says, can clearly identify bombs, planes, and who among their family or neighbors have died. Other children wail and cling to their parents nearly all the time. Many have started to hallucinate, but there are children who still have hope they will be reunited with loved ones. 12-year-old Abed El-Razak Al-Masri says if he had a wish, it would be to go back home with his family. Parents say watching the children suffer is heartbreaking. Hekmet Al-Masri, the mother, says parents here cannot answer children when they ask for food, like meat or fish or sweets that they used to eat. There is no way to provide it, she says. Israel says it places no restrictions on the amount of aid that can get into Gaza, although it insists on inspecting all deliveries to make sure they don't carry weapons meant for Hamas. But Amnesty International accuses the Israeli military of sharply limiting the aid that enters the territory. The United Nations says widespread famine is imminent if access does not improve dramatically. Efforts to provide aid via air or sea, they say, are welcomed, but cannot replace the massive influx that is needed by land. Reporting with Nidal Hamduna and Amjad Tantesh in Rafah, Gaza, Heather Murdock, VOA News, Istanbul.
As U.S. voters prepare for a new round of primaries Tuesday, U.S. President Joe Biden and his Republican political rival Donald Trump traveled to the swing state of Georgia over the weekend to hold parallel campaign events. VOA's Veronica Valdez Iglesias has a recap of the main arguments made by each candidate, who are closer than ever to become their respective party's 2024 presidential nominees.
American freedoms will be on the ballot in November, stressed President Joe Biden during a campaign event in Atlanta, Georgia. Ahead of the state's primary election Tuesday, he reminded voters of the track record of his Republican rival, former President Donald Trump, on abortion rights.
He came to office determined to see Roe v. Wade overturned. In fact, he brags about it. Well, he got his wish. And states are passing bans that criminalize doctors, forcing rape and incest victims to leave their states to get help.
But Georgia, Biden argued, can help shield women's reproductive rights.
Send me a Congress that supports the right to choose, and I promise you, I will restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again.
Trump also campaigned Saturday, but in Northwest Georgia, where he strongly criticized Biden's recent State of the Union address.
Whether you are a Republican, an independent, or a disillusioned Democrat, of which there are many, all you had to do is watch that horrible State of the Union. Crooked Joe Biden talked about Ukraine before he talked about America. Joe Biden should not be shouting angrily at America. America should be shouting angrily at Joe Biden.
The former president also decried Biden's immigration policies, citing the murder of nursing student Laken Riley on February 22nd. She allegedly died at the hands of a Venezuelan immigrant who entered the United States illegally.
That's all we prepared for you on this Monday, March 11, 2024, when I leave you with the song Fam Fam by Congolese music star Koffi Olomide. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Chang, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Est-ce que ma boucle n'a été détangissa? Dissa la sousouna niki diki. Fleur rose et zangambouma. Mais bateau bandima risque y'a ba épine. Et bon noyau fleur avec ba fruit. Ba épine pesève na yo miel. La fronta danger en gompe na zoyo. Tala ma cicatrice à boulingo. Yo kanga yo maoye. Y'a kali. Poussin bazal et la malili n'impoqua. Motalia qui maman la bangou l'entongo. Sokia bois qui li bangou le sort. Aza moto malamou tomabe. Mobumia sommelier, bébé cercueil à talou. Est-ce que ça te fasse ma cousine, pardon? Chérie, cause à la bon goûter. Oyanga motemé comme you tatouli. Et à l'amour, tout la mort. Azeli caresse au bambi kayas. Sokia boyelina.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has sanctioned 11 Zimbabwean individuals and three entities, including President Emmerson Mnangagwa, under the Global Magnitsky Sanctions Program for their connection to corruption or serious human rights abuses. These designations are part of a stronger, more targeted sanctions policy towards Zimbabwe the U.S. is implementing following President Joe Biden's approval of a new executive order terminating the Zimbabwe sanctions program that had been in effect since 2003. As a result of the imposition of global Magnitsky sanctions in Zimbabwe, all property and interest in property of the designated persons in the United States or in the possession or control of U.S. persons are blocked and must be reported to the Office of Foreign Assets Control. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a statement expressed continuing concerns regarding serious cases of corruption and human rights abuse in Zimbabwe. Key individuals, including members of the government of Zimbabwe, bear responsibility for these actions, including the looting of government coffers that rob Zimbabweans of public resources. Multiple cases of abductions, physical abuse, and unlawful killing have left citizens living in fear. Deputy Secretary of the Treasury Wally Adeyemo stressed that these sanctions are not intended to target the people of Zimbabwe. They are focused on specific targets, including President Mnangagwa's criminal network of government officials and business people who are involved in corruption related to gold and diamond smuggling networks. President Mnangagwa provides a protective shield to smugglers to operate in Zimbabwe and has directed Zimbabwean officials to facilitate the sale of gold and diamonds in illicit markets, taking bribes in exchange for his services. And Mnangagwa also oversees Zimbabwe's security services, which have violently repressed political opponents and civil society groups. The United States, said Secretary Blinken, is committed to ensuring its sanctions are relevant, timely, and targeted against those most closely connected to corruption and human rights abuses. He urged the government of Zimbabwe to move toward more open and democratic governance, including addressing corruption and protecting human rights, so all Zimbabweans can prosper.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.